Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, from wherever you're logging in from. Hopefully you'll be able to catch some insight from our guest. My name is Glenn Mulcahy. I'm the host for Love of the Game Summits podcast and now our live stream series that we're aspiring to do on a weekly basis. Our guest today is Dan Blackbird, and he wears many hats. He's a hockey trainer, coach, motivational speaker, and mentor. He's founder of NTC Hockey, which stands for National Training Center, Pillars of Greatness. Has worked with hundreds of players in the hockey space, particularly for over two decades, on physical and mental skills. And that's where the Pillars of Greatness piece comes into play. And some of the players he's worked with are the likes of John Tavares, PK Subban, Tyler Seguin, Jeff Skinner, and many others. So really looking forward to our chat today. Dan, thanks for joining us and making the time for this.
Yeah, hey, Glenn, my pleasure. Thanks to you and to your entire team. I know there's more going on behind the scenes that people will know, so a big booyah to all of them. And yeah, grateful to be here and connecting in and sharing some experience and insight with your audience.
Awesome. So the first question I ask everybody, and we've had a few conversations before this one, but just for the people that are watching this either at live or down the road when they come to our Facebook and YouTube channels, why don't you give us a little bit of background in terms of where did you grow up and what did you play as a kid?
Yeah, great question. So I grew up in Montreal. I know you and I have that in common. Look, I had a great upbringing. You know, I had an incredible mom, an awesome brother, and you know, like all families, we had our moments as brothers. And I'm sure I had moments where my mom was shaking her head left and right while she was raising me. My dad, as awesome as he was, he struggled. My entire life. He struggled with alcoholism and he served in the Korean War. And so, you know, which we now know is PTSD, but back in the 70s and 80s, you didn't walk into your doctor and say, hey, I got these funny voices, or I can't seem to focus, or I have a hard time getting out of bed. I mean, if you did it back then, they'd put you on lithium and probably throw you in what they used to call an insane asylum. And so my dad struggled, and the impact that had on me specifically was an absent father. And so everything that goes along with what a young boy, a young man, a teenager needs, I didn't have. And so I was on this quest, even I remember as a 5 and 6 and 8 year old, trying to figure out these missing pieces, like this black hole. Every couple of years, I'd be faced with some challenge or some struggle. And it was like, hey, how do I figure this out on my own? And of course, what that ended up doing was, as a young man and into my early mid 20s, was thinking that I was all by myself, that I was literally destined to be this one man show, that I was either going to succeed or fail entirely on my own. And as the deeper my dad's illness became and the more he struggled, the bigger the impact that had on me. And it wasn't until, and we'll get into it, but it wasn't until my late 20s where I really started to figure out a way that I could succeed, even in spite of these difficult times and then the emotional challenges and struggles I had. I was really able to get plugged into some resources and some tools that helped me achieve, be successful, and by the grace of God, be able to do what I've been doing for a quarter of a century.
You know, it's ironic the similarities of our paths, because we both grew up in Montreal. We both had my father, actually, in lieu of alcoholism, he actually passed away when I was 8 years old. So I grew up single mother. And the thing that kept me glued and helped me get to where I am today was I played a million different sports, and I had a whole bunch of great coaches that kind of took me under their wing, knowing that I'd lost my father, and kind of helped teach me all the life lessons I have today. So who knows where I would have turned up as well, because I've got the same thing, late teens, early 20s. I was like fatherless, you know, all the way through. And like, my mother did the best she could to kind of wear the two hats. But there is something about, you know, missing that father component and that direction, all that stuff. So kind of ironic how the path. So why hockey? How did that kind of come into your life?
I think like a lot of Canadians, you know, we grew up in this, you know, hockey at some way, some stretch, it touches us or we touch it. And as a young boy, you know, playing hockey was something I loved to do, whether it was out in the backyard ponds or you know, outdoor rinks, or organized hockey. And so it just became a way of life. I played until I was in my probably mid to late teens. And then you know, like a lot of us, started, I pivoted to different areas of my life. And then it wasn't, you know, it wasn't long. And I moved to Ontario and was separated from the game for, you know, probably 6-7 years. And then, and I teach our athletes a lot about this in our Pillars of Greatness program. And we have an incredible program. It's called Building the Complete Athlete. And I talk to athletes all the time about being fulfilled, right? It's like finding this thing that scratches that itch on the inside, that part that lights you up, that you just know when you're doing it, like minutes and hours and days can go by, challenges and struggles and the outside world can be happening. But when you're in this space, it is so fluid, and it's something, it's such a resonance and a connection for you. And that is what hockey is and was for me. And so I remember this Sunday afternoon, living in Mississauga, Ontario, I open up the Mississauga, you know, whatever their internal programs are, you know, from gymnastics to karate. And I thought, hey, you know, I wonder if there's a hockey going on. And I read through and it says, yeah, hockey tryouts. Here's your contact. I pick up the phone. I call this guy, Wally Reed. And he says, I'm just going out the house. He says, but I'm like, we're on the ice in like an hour. He goes, can you meet me at Port Credit Arena? And so, you know, I'm good to go. So it's like jump in the car, pull out my rusty blades that hadn't been worn for a couple of years, head down to this Port Credit Arena, walk in, introduce myself to this gentleman at the main desk who happens to be Wally. I said, hey, I'm Dan. We just spoke on the phone. He goes, awesome. He says, there's a whole bunch of kids up there that they're here for tryouts. You got to go run the tryout. So, you know, anybody that knows anything about being a hockey coach, you know, number one is like have some preparation. And so I walk up these stairs. And as I was coming up these stairs that were beside the rink, as the higher I climbed, the more, so this was the rink boards, the more I could see of the rink until I got to the top of these stairs. And there were, Glenn, there were 60 kids on the ice. And these kids were 6, 7, 8 years of age. And Wally Reed is telling the guy that just called him, you know, an hour earlier, go out there and run a practice. Run the tryouts. and I had no clue what I was doing. First time on the ice in ages, B, totally overwhelmed, all kinds of stories in my head of like, I'm not going to be good enough. How can I do this? I can't, you know, I can't even coach myself out of a wet paper bag. I got 60 kids. How do I run practice? Like all this was going through my mind. And to your point about having fatherly figures, there was this gentleman skated over to me by the name of Rick Crumpton. And he said, Dan, I'm Rick. Nice to meet you. He says, I'll stick around. I'll help you out. And, you know, he was like my savior. You know, I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Here's this guy that's coming over to me saying, Dan, I'll run practice, which to me meant I can just stand on the sidelines and push some pylons around and you tell me what to do and I'll do it. And Rick ended up being such a pivotal person in my life where he gave me my first head coaching spot a year later. He saw something inside of me. You know, you talk about fatherly roles. I think one of the things as dads, as coaches, as leaders to youth is we get to see something in the next generation that they quite possibly don't even see in themselves. And that's what Rick saw in me. I was 27, 28 years old, and he saw something in me. He saw this intangible, this passion, this drive. I never missed a practice. I was the first guy on the ice. I was connected with the kids. I was challenging them, but I was lifting them up. And so he gave me my first head coaching spot. And so here I am 23 years later, everything that I've done in hockey has been something that's been built on my previous experience. And that, you know, Rick's presence on that first day. And then at the end of that year, him giving me a head coaching spot. I wouldn't even have applied for a head coaching spot. I didn't think I was ready. And Rick saw that in me. That literally became the starting point, the pendulum swinging to everything that I've done to this day. And when I reach out to Rick now, I still, you know, I remind him of that all the time, like how pivotal he was in my hockey journey.
It's amazing how we have those epiphany moments, right? And the people that are going to point us in the crossroads and direction. So that was you, no kids, no parent, because a lot of coaches now in the hockey space, parent coaches starting up, you know, most that I've interacted with, usually by mid-30s, because a lot of people are having kids later in life than they did then. What age groups were you coaching and how did that path evolve? Like how high did you go up the pipeline in terms of?
So I was 27 at the time. No kids, you know, wasn't even in a relationship. I just knew that I loved the game. And it's interesting because, you know, hockey really became this pivot point for me where I was able to immerse so much passion and drive and time and effort into And it paid huge dividends. At the time, those kids were seven, eight. You know, back then, I think it was called Tyke or Minor Tyke here in Ontario. And then I coached that house league group for a couple of years, and then went to single A, and then to double A, and then triple A, and then sort of cycled back through the triple A group here in Ontario. Our triple A is our highest level of minor hockey. Right. And so went through that, the triple A group a few times, with different age groups. But you know, it was, and I said at the start, you know, it was during this time where I was really questioning my own self as a young adult, a 27-year-old man, not really feeling like I had direction. I mean, I had a job and I was, you know, showing up in the world. I was, you know, I was doing my part, if you will, but I wasn't leading from a place of passion and conviction and fulfillment. And hockey gave me that. Hockey provided me with those tools and those resources. When I was 27, 28, and friends of mine, you know, they wanted to go out clubbing and they wanted to go hang out and do things. And I said, guys, I'm going to Sarnia or I'm going to London or, you know, we're going to Lake Placid. We're in a hockey tournament. And they looked at me like I'm crazy. They're like, what are you talking? And the parents, you know, you talked about that too, Glenn, is that the parents were saying to me like, dude, you're like a single, like there's not a lot of 27-year-old guys that are like here that are helping, that are coaching and supporting our kids the way that you do. And for me, it just became this natural evolution, this flow. And so much so, and this is where, you know, I said earlier about in our Building the Complete Athlete program, we teach athletes about the power of fulfillment. You see, I was so fulfilled in what I was doing that people in my, call it the outside hockey world, they could see that inside of me. And there was this one gentleman, a friend of mine by the name of Neil, and he said to me one night, he said, Dan, what are you going to do now? Like, you finish school, you know, you're doing this hockey thing. That they used to laugh all the time because I'd, you know, be going home early and be up at 4:30 or 5 in the morning for a 6 a.m. practice. Yeah. And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe something in the corporate space. And he said, Dan, why don't you train hockey players? Like, why don't you do off-ice training? I mean, I was competing in bodybuilding at the time. I was purely committed to my own personal well-being, physically speaking and emotionally speaking. And I looked at him and I laughed and I said, Neil, like, nobody's doing that. Right? And I say this to all of your listeners now and the people watching is like, how many times have you looked at a moment, an opportunity, and brushed it aside because, you know, there was nobody doing it? And so I laughed. And as I walked around that night, I remember thinking over and over, like, this commentary that Neil had offered me, it literally wouldn't escape my mind. It was like a kitten chasing a ball of yarn in my head. And as the night went on, I thought, yeah, but just because it's not working doesn't mean someone never tried it. And even if someone tried it, their way is certainly going to be different than my way. Not that my way is going to be the perfect way. It's just going to be a different way. And on those two principles alone, and on the suggestion of Neil, I started with this house league team I was working. I started training hockey players. I got a local gym after hours and got a key, got the kids in there. We did some very basic off ice or dry land training, and the impact was immediate. It was incredible. And I knew then that here was this marriage. I loved the physical aspect of the athletics of the human body, of how you can grow and change and evolve. And I was so committed to the game, to the emotional, to the mental part of the game. It was like, wow, here's this symbiotic connection that is going to be a win-win. And nobody was doing it. And so for the first 2-3 years in business, I was educating people. I was going to any event I could. I was going to any group. I was speaking. I was being laughed out of rooms. I was calling coaches saying, hey, we're going to do off-ice training. And true story, Glenn, coaches would say to me, and I heard this number of times, office furniture. I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm a little single A or house league coach, and I'm calling triple A coaches, which I thought would have been the cream of the crop. And you know, from coaching that sometimes that's the case. Sometimes it's furthest from the case. And I said, no, guys, dry line. You remember in 1972, remember what happened with the rut? Oh, dry line. Yeah. Well, no, we're going to skate an extra 2 hours this week or an extra 5 hours a day in the summer. And I thought, look, that's great. But I also know there's a way you can come away from the rink and we can work on other things physically. And so I started in that same gym where I got started working with that young group. I moved over to an arena here in Toronto. I got a trailer, an outdoor trailer, a construction trailer, 52 feet long, you know, 8.5 feet wide. We reinforced the floor. We put a special air filtration system in it. And we started training kids. We outgrew that very quickly, moved into the rink. And that's where we've been now for 23 years. We moved in there August of 1998. And it all started because I had this drive to serve, to help, to guide these young men and women, and show up, just be the best I could be. And I made so many mistakes, my God, but I just wanted to show up to be the strength. You know why? Because Glenn, I didn't have the dad. I didn't have that male figure that stood up for me, that showed up. My dad, as I described, the alcoholism was so bad. More often than not, he wouldn't show up to pick my brother and I up on the weekend. He'd leave us. I remember sitting on my stairs in tears, feeling like I was absolutely unlovable, not worthy of the love and affection. And clearly I must have done something wrong in order for my dad not to come pick me up and want to hang out with me on the weekend. And so I carried this around with me. So I was going to be a stand for these athletes, and I've been doing it for 23 years, to show up and be that guy who was always there, even if it meant I had to go to bed at 1 in the morning and be up at 4:30 to be on the ice with them at 6, I was going to do it because that's what was important to me. And so it was on the wings of that effort of me showing up with those principles that people, parents, athletes began seeing what I had to offer was a necessity. And, you know, here we are, like I said, a quarter of a century later, and we've worked with some pretty iconic names and some stories of players that you'd never names you might not recognize, but have helped them completely transform their lives, where they're living, you know, uber successful lives today.
Yeah, and the irony is you're way ahead of the curve in terms of the off ice development, for lack of a better word, and then the morphing, not just on the physical side. So maybe that's a great precursor to the pillars of grace in this, in terms of the mental side, because that's what's augmented your program, make and differentiates right. you from probably right. many others. I mean, my son did a whole bunch of different skill development camps, a whole bunch of different skill development coaches for many years, but none of them offered the mental side. It was all just on ice, on ice, on ice. Some did the dry land component, but now we're starting to see this big shift where organizations are recognizing the importance. So tell mm-hmm. us a little bit about how that whole evolved and where you've gone with that.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's funny, like I've always been that guy, even before I could label it and name it. I've always taught players the physical, but also the mental, the emotional, and also the spiritual side, you know, the meditation, calming the mind, being clear. And so I started doing that with myself. I started the Pillars of Greatness with me because I was in a dark place when I was 27. And I knew I needed to figure a way to get out. I wanted something different. I didn't know how, but I wanted something different. And I came up with this formula, dream, plan, execute. And I started formulating this process, and it worked for me. It worked for me like almost immediately. And I felt so engaged, so plugged into my life, so enthused, so excited. And then the acid test, then it was time to then impart this knowledge, this program on athletes. And the first athlete I worked with was David Boland. He was 12, 13 at the time. I worked with David for probably 10 years. And remember teaching him the fundamentals of, look, it's not just important to be a good athlete. It's critical that you are successful on and off the ice in hockey and in life, because those, the crossover, the connection between who you are as a person, into who you are as an athlete are literally the same. I just happen to wear the blue hat or I wear the red hat, but I'm the guy wearing the hat. So however I show up inside is who I'm going to be when I wear the blue hat or when I wear the red hat. And so what we've done since then is it worked with David. He won a world junior in 05. A Memorial Cup in 05, a world junior in 06. He won a Stanley Cup twice with Chicago. And what we did since then is we've taken these habits, these skills, these rituals, and we put it together in a formula to teach players how to have mental resilience, how to build the winner's mindset, so that they also can be successful in hockey and in life.
The transfer piece coming out of the hockey world, because I know a lot of the issues, not just in hockey, but I know the CFL is having some challenges, transition from when their skates are being hung up. So whether it's the end of minor hockey, junior hockey, they go play a little bit of pro. How important is for players to get that piece as part of their mindset?
It's crazy. Listen to any parent or player that's watching. I say this to everybody, whether you're Joe Thornton or Chris Chelios or, you know, Gordie Howe was still playing when he was, you know, in his 50s. Right. I say this to everybody. I hope that hockey ends and that consumes at the very most one third of your life. and that you still have 66% of your life to live. So if you play hockey till you're 25, if you play hockey till you're 30, I hope that you can go to your 75, to your 90, till you're 100, living a prosperous, abundant, successful life. And so teaching players to be successful is number one, while they're playing the game at a young age, 9, 10, 12, 16, recognizing that they are more than the hockey player. The hockey is something that they do. It's something that they can be passionate about and successful, and they can achieve beyond their wildest dreams. And there's also life outside of hockey. And so when we do that with players at a young age, the pivot, or as you described, the transition from post-hockey is significantly easier, because we've already built the foundation. We've already taught them the process, the value of service, the value of family and friends, the value of, yes, your career is critically important. But what about what do you do when you're crossing the street and you see someone that needs a helping hand? Are you aware? Are you conscious of how you can support them? What are all the things that you're doing over the course of your day to show up to be the best version of you? When we start with the players when they're young, the transition or the pivot from whenever they end hockey to whatever comes next is seamless. But it's the tools and resources that they learn early on so that they can achieve that success when that moment happens.
And the setting them up for life beyond hockey, which is the big challenge that many of us have, regardless of the sports space they were in. Like my athletic career kind of came to a grinding halt as a result of, you know, major concussion and a serious injury to my left knee. No more rugby, no more football. And then what do I do? You know, you're kind of like, you don't have, no one set you up for that post athletic career. Fortunately, I decided, okay, I'll go to university and the path just kind of follows suit. There's been a lot of talk, and I'm kind of curious what your definition is on this spin, because you've been in this space for a long time. Mental health is probably the biggest hot topic right now in the last, say, 5 years. Mm-hmm. What is your definition of what mental health should be? Because a lot of people speak with a stigma, and I don't believe in that. I think, health, you know, sound body, sound mind. That's always been my belief.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I say to parents all the time, I think it's fabulous that we have, you know, Bell Let's Talk, and there's a lot of corporate people that have come to the table, and they're really pushing the agenda of educating and teaching that mental health is the same as physical health. And I love that. And yet, you know, there's this one tagline that I hear often. It says, it's okay not to be okay. And to me, that comment alone undermines the entire initiative of telling people that we all struggle, and that there is no label of okay, not okay. Like, you're always okay, right? When I show up and I'm grumpy, or I'm feeling anxious about something, or I got fears and apprehensions in my mind, I'm okay in that moment. You see, because the moment you tell me that I'm not okay, but then at the same time you say, but no, but it's okay not to be okay. Like, that negativity, that messaging, it's still telling me that I'm not okay. Like, we're still sending the message home that it's not okay. And the reality is that it's beautiful. Like, the struggles that I have physically, the struggles that I have emotionally, the struggles that I have physically, emotionally, mentally, they're all beautiful, because it's all growth. Like, when I talked about my story in 1997, when I was in this dark place, is that it was beautiful. It was literally the pivot point. If I hadn't have been there, I would not have been able to get from where I was then to where I wanted to be. And it was my willingness to be like, look, I'm okay. Do I like where I am? No. Do I need some support? Yeah. Do I have all the answers myself? No chance. Okay. So let me go find someone to talk with, to learn from, to grow from. And then let me put those pieces in play. And then let me just chip away at it every day. But every day I got up, I reminded myself that I was okay, that I was beautiful. There was never once a thought that I wasn't okay. And so anybody that's listening to this or watching, and you're going through a dark time, I want you to know that whatever you are going through right now, it's beautiful. It may feel like crap. You may feel like low, and you want the drapes pulled down, and you want the covers over. I get it. I absolutely get it. And even in that moment of darkness, that is beautiful and that is okay. And with the support and with the help, there's a way to, like, maybe you pull the sheet down halfway today and that's it. And that's fine. That is growth. You see, Glenn, when we talk about athletes, we talk about the human element. We're looking to grow. Like, who is it? Like, how can it be possible that I'm supposed to measure what growth is for you, or you're supposed to measure what growth looks like for Becky or for Bobby? Growth is growth. You know, one inch of growth or 1 meter of growth is still growth. And so when we talk to our athletes, when we talk to families, and I do a lot of work in this space, the number one thing is to acknowledge to the athlete to be able to look at themselves in the mirror, literally in the mirror, and be like, I freaking love you, man. And I'm okay. And I might be going through a crappy time. I might be frustrated and angry. 100%. All of those feelings are as beautiful as the euphoria you feel, the smile, the happiness, when you see the picture of someone at the top of the mountain raising their arm. All of those feelings are beautiful and amazing. It's just a matter of finding the tools, finding the people to connect with so that you can navigate from, like I was, from where you are to where you want to be.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us near the end of our chat in terms of the COVID era. We are coming out of, I know Toronto and Ontario is still in the kind of the shutdown mode. Over the last 15 months, you've interacted with probably, I don't know how many players and athletes, female and male. How many of them have really struggled through this, number one? And number two, what has been your kind of approach to help them get over this hurdle and see the positive out of the negative?
Yeah, I did a recent poll. 80% of the athletes that we polled are more focused on the storm, on the oh no, on the what if, on the oh my God, than they are the opportunity. And that means that 20%, 2 out of 10, you know, 20 out of 100 are looking at the opportunity. The rest are looking at the dark side. And that, to your point, that is a huge impact of COVID. And so, you know, we've literally wrapped our arms around the athletes in a virtual sense. And we're, you know, the Building the Complete Athlete program is something that we've been using for years, but we've really stepped it up to support. We build a community. We have a WhatsApp group, our virtual locker room, where players are in there 24/7 around the world. We have players in there from Latvia. And this is the thing, is that, you know, you talk about Ontario versus BC, or if someone in the US, you know, Washington versus Maryland. And yet this is a global thing. And so we're all struggling. And there's various, you know, some cities and towns and provinces and states and countries are wide open with lots of hockey and others aren't. And I get that. And yet, much like my dad experienced when he was fought in the Korean War, the PTSD, the impact, the emotional strain, the burdens that we carry through this dark time are still real. And so we've created this community where we have athletes in Latvia, in Sweden, in Germany, across Canada, in the US, that 24/7 they can jump in there and they can have honest, meaningful conversation that literally could look like, today I'm struggling. Today, guys are messaging. One boy took a picture of his dad and he said, this is what I'm grateful for in my life. You know, one player said, I'm grateful for the fact that I have a gym. Like, it sucks that I can't get on the ice, but I'm grateful that I have a gym in my house and I have a computer and I can use this program and I can still train to get better and stronger and faster. And so for us, you know, it is and it has always been about building community where players are accepted, where they're allowed to show up with, as I said before, show up with all their beauty, even the times when they feel like pulling the covers up, all of their beauty, bring all of it to the table. And we work together, we learn, we grow, and that we support so that every single athlete in the program, every single athlete that's out there playing can literally be part of that 20%, and that they can see the abundance and prosperity. Because I'll tell you this, I believe that there is more opportunity available now for hockey players. There's more now than there has ever been before, because 80% are looking at the dark. 80% are looking at the, oh, I'm not okay, or it's not okay, or oh my God, what do we do now? And that means there's only 20% of the players that are saying, I'm thirsty and hungry for the silver lining. Like, I'm watching. I need a storm to grow. Every tree that you look at outside your window, if it wasn't for the rain and the storm, that tree would not have grown to the size it is now. And so our resiliency is in our ability to weathering the storm and finding the opportunity in those storms. And so that's what we will continue to do, is to continue to harvest the strength, the energy, teach the athletes the skills, the habits, the rituals, build that mental resiliency, teach the winner's mindset so that you said earlier, so that they can be successful in hockey and in life right now. And we'll keep pouring into the program and pouring into the athletes and watch them grow so that we can build more of those, take that 20% and grow it to 22 and 25 and hopefully to 50 or 60%.
So on that note, kind of as a wrap up and then try to hopefully we get some Q&A. What's your vision now that you've been down this path? I mean, you got the 2 decades plus of experience. You've got the this whole COVID craziness the last 15 months. Ontario has been locked down longer than any of the other provinces, and sounds like you're finally slowly but surely going to be opening up. Your vision for a better normal in youth sports in general, like because attrition has been a big deal before COVID. And yep. Hockey's, and I know that a lot of players, like you're saying, they see in the dark, they may or may not come back after COVID. So what's your vision to bring that back to some sense of, let's call it a better normal, where kids are enjoying, are loving the game better, more than they did at the beginning?
For sure. I think, you know, this is very reminiscent to what I went through in 1998 when I started NTC hockey. And everybody laughed at me when I told them about physical training. And I've been pounding my fist on the table around mental and emotional health for, you know, decade and a half. And people looked at me, you're kind of crazy. Oh, all you do is motivation. You know, when I did my TED talk, I talked about the pillars of greatness, about the power of our greatness. Our greatness, every single one of you listening to this, your greatness resides within you. It is not what you win, what you achieve, the level you play at, how far you make it up the mountain. Your greatness is a belief inside of yourself that resides. It was with you in the moment you took your first breath, and it will be with you until you take your last breath. The question is, do you know what that greatness is? Do you know how to get to it, to harness it, and do you know how to share it, to push it outward into the world? And so I believe now through COVID is we've had this pause that allows parents, athletes, players, coaches to recognize that there's other tools that they're going to need to lean on because they don't have a skating rink. They don't have a gym. They don't have an environment. Here in Ontario, you couldn't even go outside with more than a group of one or two people to do workouts. And so we've had to look at other options. And so things like, you know, like we're doing right now, Zoom calls, the coaching program we do, the WhatsApp, this now, I believe, and I say there's abundance and opportunity, players now see the resourcefulness that they have, like the ability to get the support that they need no matter where they are on this planet, no matter what level they're at, no matter where they are, where they want to go. There are resources available to them. And so I believe by changing the direction of the North Star isn't just about getting to that level and winning the trophy. It's about, I want to get that. And I'm a competitive guy. I want to win. I want my trophy case filled, but not at the cost of not being complete and fulfilled with myself. And so what we're now able to teach athletes, and what I'm so excited about through this time, is that we've been able to indoctrinate and teach players and families and coaches and teams and organizations and leagues that there's a tool, there's a way that we can build the mental and the emotional part of the athlete, which will make them a better player, ironically, but we have tools and resources that we can build this community and we can plug in, we can bring this surge of power into these athletes and into families that I don't believe we would have been able to before, at least not the same way we are now in the face of COVID pandemic or post-pandemic or post-COVID, I don't know, wherever we are in this continuum. And so it's being able to bring these tools and having parents and players and teams be open and thirsty and hungry for this information so they can feast on these tools, which these are the tools that are going to be the nitrous oxide or the turbo that's going to blast them into a whole new level of performance on the ice, but mostly the performance of who they are as young women and young men.
Yeah, I could agree with you more. I mean, some similar kind of scenario with us. You know, I had the vision 3+ years ago of running virtual summits. And the first foray, like four of them, were pre-recorded interviews, a whole bunch of people across the globe. But when we were able to ramp it up to live, that was a deal breaker. And now, you know, we have organizations that are reaching out to us saying, hey, you know, we want you to do that for us. But a lot of people see the COVID as a kind of a bad deal. If you look at Zoom as a platform, pre-COVID, they had about 20 million subscribers. They're over 200 million now.
It's crazy.
You mentioned WhatsApp. That's another platform that came out of 2008 was the year it launched in the recessionary year. And now look at it. Like WhatsApp, like I never thought my wallet stream I would be using it personally. But it's way I've interacted with so many of our players and coaches and whatever the case may be. My team behind the scenes, we use it all the time. So there has been the silver lining. And that's where I love, you know, where I have conversations. You never really go on the dark side. You're always on the positive. And I want to close this conversation off. I'm not seeing anything in the chat feed. So correct me if I'm wrong, the hoorah, your buzzword, your shtick.
Booyah.
Where'd that come from? I got to ask the question because I hear you say that.
Yeah. No, thanks for asking. I get that a lot. Like anybody that knows me, like I'm energy. I come in the room and I'm not trying to be the loudest guy, but sometimes it just happens and you might like me, you might not, but I'm not going to apologize for being fully authentic me. And when I make mistakes, I'll step up and apologize, but I'm not going to apologize for being the biggest, brightest, most potent Dan Blackburn that I can possibly be on this planet. And that's what we teach our athletes, you know. Real quick, just sort of before I answer the booyah question, PK Subban. I started working with PK Subban when he was 8 years old. And the one thing that PK has been consistent with is his living out loud attitude. It's about the smile on his face. The smile that I see him now when I look on his Instagram or I see him out in the world doing the things that he's doing, it's the same smile that he had when he was 8 years old the first time I met him. It was the same smile that the first time I ever trained him, he was literally nauseous. He was literally sick to his stomach. And after, you know, a break and a little bit of cleanup, he literally came back with that same smile on his face and said, okay, coach, now what? Like, what's next? And so he's lived his life. What you see with PK, again, whether you like him or you don't, what you see is what you get. If you play with him, play against him, you follow him, you're best friends with him and you hang out with him. What you see is what you get. And so I love that about him. And there's countless other players that live the same way. And so we teach our athletes all the time, it takes courage to live that way. It takes courage to live pedal to the metal, full out. Here's who you are, and stop making excuses. Stop holding back. Stop hiding in the darkness because you're worried about what someone might say, what they did say, what you think they will say in the future. And for me, it took me a long time to get to that place, but it's so freeing. And so back to your question, the booyah, I was on stage at an event and I was feeling so euphoric. I was just feeling so alive. And I, you know, I, yay, or like, hooray, or like, oh yeah. Like it just didn't seem to do my feelings justice. Okay. And this word came to me, booyah. And I don't know, I know, you know, Kramer has used it on Seinfeld, I guess. And then there's another person that uses it quite regularly in the financial industry. And I don't even know if that's where I heard it. It just felt so good. It literally felt like the perfect fit for how I was feeling in that moment. And I just said it from the stage. And I said, okay, let's divide the crowd in half. You guys say booyah, and then you guys say it. Whoever's the loudest wins. And we had like this booyah contest. It was incredible. And what I saw was the energy that I had, and then the vocalizing of that word, and then sharing it with you, I could see how infectious it was. And so I remember leaving that conversation and that event and thinking, man, that word is so awesome. So then I got connected to the feeling that word has, and it's tattooed here on my arm, and it's so meaningful to me. And so my daughter, my youngest daughter, Taylor, she's 19 now, she has the exact same tattoo. I wrote the B-O-O, and she wrote the Y-A-H, and then we took it to a tattoo artist, and hers is scaled a couple sizes smaller to fit her arm, but it's literally the exact same tattoo. So it's so meaningful to me because it represents, it embodies who I am. When I say booyah, I can't hide behind the curtain in the dark, afraid to show up fully me. I'm like, dude, once that word precedes me or I say that word, it's like full on, here he is. And so it's now become a calling card for me and something that not just for me, but clearly my daughter and countless other people who follow me and who are part of our programs use the word as well. And every time we sign off our group coaching or any of the calls we have, all the players are always like, booyah. You know, they write it on the screen. I mean, yeah, so it's just, it's become this powerful word that really connects us all to the greatness that we are and the greatness that we have inside of us.
And you kind of set it up for the how do people find and track and find your resources. I know we're having dialogue and sharing your stuff out through our platform. But if people want to connect with you directly and find out how to booyah, we've got the ticker tape down below with all your social media and stuff like that. But if best way to reach you and connect with you directly would be how?
Yeah. So if they go to the Instagram, in our Instagram bio, there's a link. Go to the link. You can book a coaching call with me. You can find out all about the program. My personal Instagram is Dan W. Blackburn. You can hit me up there, message me, and or you can email me dan@danblackburn.com. Yeah, and I'm, you know, listen, Glenn, I started this almost like I can't, when I say a quarter of a century sounds so,
you know, much, what, you don't want to so age yourself, man, because you know, yeah, what, you said 27, 23, you know, people are doing
but here's the thing I love about it is that I started this because it was a passion of mine. It was something I love to do. And I feel like a big part of the work I've done is help players overcome challenges and setbacks and really see the light, see the opportunity. And so if you're a hockey player out there, you're a parent, you're a coach, I implore you, reach out to me. And I, you know, more than ever, I'm here to serve, much like, you know, you have an amazing team behind you, Glenn, that makes all the magic happen. I have an incredible team behind me. I feel like I have more resources and availability now than I've ever had before. And so reach out. The greatness that you have and the greatness that you are is so easy to reveal. And so wherever you are on the continuum, I know that in life, we all want something more. Tony Robbins says it. He says, if you're either growing or you're dying. And so I said it earlier, grow an inch or grow a meter. It's still growth. And so I implore you to reach out to me at any of these down below on the screen, or dan@danblackburn.com, or on my Dan W. Blackburn Instagram. And I'd be happy to chat, answer your questions, jump on a coaching call with you, serve, help, guide you any way that I can. If our program is a great fit for you, then amazing. We could have you be part of that. But I want to continue to pass the message along and show you that there's abundance and prosperity floating right in front of you right now that you're probably missing out on.
Awesome. A great way to wrap it up and plug the seed and plant the programs. And I'll let you finish it off with your infamous tagline so we can wrap up. And people will see this on our platforms and we'll be able to share it out. So it's awesome chatting with you.
Yeah, my pleasure. I tell everybody all the time, you know, make today a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal day, because the truth is we have today. And no matter what you're going through, you are beautiful, you are amazing, and you are great. And great people always, always, always do great things. Have a phenomenal one. Booyah.
Booyah. All right. Thank you, sir. That was a blast. I really enjoyed the chat.
Awesome.